Good evening. This is the Voice of America in Washington. Welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'm Douglas Mpuga. This evening, we'll talk about Kenya's anti-terror efforts. Tonight, we have my colleague, Patrick Deya. Patrick, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Douglas.
You're welcome. We also have Fred Omolo, a journalist with the Kenyan newspaper, The Standard. Fred joins us from Kisumu. Good evening, Fred.
Good evening, Douglas.
Thanks for joining the show.
Thank you so much.
Okay. And Andrews Atta Asamoah. Andrews is a senior researcher at the Institute for Security Studies in Pretoria. You'll be joining us from the South African capital, Pretoria. Gentlemen, once again, welcome to Reporters Roundtable. And our topic tonight, as I said, is going to be Kenya's anti-terror efforts. Kenya just deregistered 509 government organizations, including 15, accused of links with terrorism. The government has also frozen their bank accounts and revoked their work permits of some foreign employees. This follows a heated debate in the Kenyan parliament of a controversial new security bill aimed at fighting militants. Many people have condemned this bill that it goes a bit too far. Let me start in Kisumu there. What's the general feel of the people about the proposed new law, the bill, the anti-terrorism bill, and the reaction of government to these NGOs?
As often happens in Kenya, Douglas, a lot of these issues, people are usually split across the political divide. So you have the Jubilee side, which is the government political wing, and then you have the court side, which is led by Raila Odinga, whom I think you know very well. But aside from the political and the tribal split over this issue, one thing we are seeing is a convergence of people who understand this bill. Now, the main explanation that the president himself has come up with is that this bill is necessary to be able to tighten security in the country and to be able to deal with the terror attacks. What is the bill itself? I have a copy right here. I have a PDF copy that I've been pouring through for the last 2-3 days, and it's about 90 pages, just full of amendments. Full of different sorts of amendments. But every once in a while, you come across something interesting. I'll give you an example here, right?
Yes.
They want to insert a new section in the security laws, in the penal code, and it says, a person who publishes or causes to be published or distributed obscene, gory, or offensive material which is likely to cause fear and alarm to the general public or disturb public is guilty of a felony and is liable upon conviction to a fine not exceeding 1 million shillings or imprisonment for a term not exceeding 3 years or both, where the offense is committed by a media enterprise to a fine not exceeding 5 million shillings. Now, are you fighting the media or are you fighting the terrorists? Because what you're seeing here is, if, for example, an attack happens, like has happened over the last month, an attack happens somewhere in northeastern Kenya, Al-Shabaab does something or whatever it is, right? You need the permission of the police to even say that an attack has happened. And if you don't, you can end up in prison, right?
Yes.
A second interesting, right? Now, this is a 90-page document. It's full of amendments, but every once in a while, you come up across something interesting. A person who intentionally insults the modesty of any other person by intruding upon that person's privacy or strips such a person is guilty of a felony and is liable to imprisonment for a term not exceeding 20 years. So, for example, if I say Douglas Mpuga, the security minister, is lazy, or I show a picture of Douglas Mpuga relaxing in Seychelles while Al-Shabaab is killing people in Nairobi, and he feels that I have attacked his modesty, I can end up in jail for 20 years, right? And I can just do this on Facebook or Twitter or wherever it is. Right? So who are we fighting? Are we fighting Al-Shabaab or are we fighting ourselves? I think the Security Amendment Bill has provided an opportunity for some very shadowy forces to bring back the tyranny that the Constitution of 2010 was working to wipe away.
Yes.
The bill empowers the National Intelligence Services to intercept and record telephone conversations without a court order, an action that previously required a high court approval. So it's really strange what's going on here.
We
are having an election, and they've admitted that we have very porous borders. They've admitted that there are people in the government and in the security are corrupt. But they are now fighting ordinary Kenyans instead of the guys in the system who are causing this problem.
I see. Patrick, you just had Fred there enumerate those things. Many people, especially human rights groups, have condemned this bill because actually it allows the government to tap communications without court consent. It has the right, it asks for the right to detain terror suspects for up to 1 year without trial. And as he mentioned about journalists, do you think if you add this one to the action of the government to deregister over 500 NGOs, do you think the government is overreacting?
This bill is a total overreaction by the government. Mm-hmm. And it's nothing short of that. I mean, this bill is doing exactly what terrorists want a government to do, live in fear.
Mm-hmm.
And this bill is driven by nothing other than fear. But also, I think, it also sneaks in things that will be very, very detrimental to democracy and freedom to all Kenyans.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just the examples that Mr. Omolo has alluded to. It totally would kill any investigative type of journalism.
Mm-hmm.
It would muzzle journalists from reporting anything that the government deems fit. And who decides that whatever has been said is injurious to the community?
Mm-hmm.
Is there going to be a government official who has the magic wand to say, well, what Mr. Molo said as a journalist is bad to the community, and therefore he deserves to be prosecuted? This is ridiculous, really.
And Fred, there are those who point out that the government actually may be infringing on the constitution. Is that from your reporting and talking to people? Is there that sense?
Yes, of course, there's that sense. There are a number of bills that are suffered right now, because the government, using its hectic ability in the National Assembly, has managed to push through those bills. One of them touches on the media bill, and they were putting in amendments there that were considered to be an infringement on freedom of expression. And when they passed this through, the Media Owners Association, the Media Council of Kenya, all of these guys took this issue to court, and it's now currently sitting at the Supreme Court, awaiting a ruling. And probably that will be the fate of this other bill that is going to be before Parliament tomorrow. Chances are that they will use the overwhelming majority in Parliament to pass the bill, but it's going to stall somewhere down the line. Meanwhile, ordinary Kenyans are still going to get shot and killed by terrorists and all these shadowy groups operating in the country.
Patrick, the bill aside, this act of Kenya, of the government jumping on over 500 NGOs,
right.
some of them actually happen to be not Muslim. Some of them are Christian organizations. What do you make of this?
I think this is the government, unfortunately, the Jubilee government has been on the tails of these non-government organizations with... And I think this is now a place where they want to come down on them.
Mm-hmm.
Because really, you cannot, this is a sweeping, they're using such a wide broom for something that they should be, they should have a very meticulous investigation as who these Al-Shababs are, whatnot. This does not just affect the NGOs. This becomes a far-reaching effect to anybody who wants to have an organization that does not necessarily take the government view.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, it's totally against what democracy should really be.
Fred, do people see transparency in all this, or it's coming to like somebody's or a group of people acting on their own for what they believe is the best interest of the country?
I think the sense now is more of that, because this amendment just popped out of nowhere. It was sitting somewhere. If you remember the last time we had reported council, it was about 2 weeks ago, and the attack that precipitated the resignation of the Interior Affairs Minister and the Inspector General of Police had just after the nomination of a new minister of interior affairs, within a few days, I think 2 or 3 days, this bill with these amendments just popped out of nowhere and was there. There has been giving powers to all the security organs that are not even related to terrorism. Secondly, and most importantly, he gave the powers of appointing the Inspector General of Police to the President, right? So there is a sense that there is a cover somewhere. And the manner in which the President has defended this bill probably points to, I'm not saying who's the case, but probably points to the fact that he has the knowledge that this thing was lying somewhere, looking for the opportune moment to just bring it out. And the general sense is that it is not good. Among the people I speak to, the people I read commentaries about in the paper, is that this thing is not for the good of Kenyans. It's just someone somewhere trying to tighten their control and their grip on power. That is the problem. It is not addressing the main issue, which is insecurity and terror attack.
Patrick, there are many Kenyans and friends of Kenya. We're excited at the new constitution, which gave a lot of, made some changes, devolved some powers to the counties, and guaranteed a certain level of human rights in the country. There are those who are concerned that maybe these actions may be rolling back those gains.
This action will definitely roll back those gains, and we're... These actions will put Kenya into a very fast track to becoming a police state, where people's right to even congregate, because part of what this bill talks about is denying people the right to congregate, denying people the right to organize, to have permission from a certain body first before you can you can have a rally for any particular purpose. This really is not good for Kenya, and it's not good for any country that is trying to develop its democratic state.
Well, gentlemen, we won't take a short break. I will be back to continue our discussion of Kenya's anti-terror clampdown.
Do you love music from Africa and the world? VOA has the latest hits, interviews with the artists, and we are glad to take your requests. The Voice of America has what you're looking for. We have music shows to please everyone. Join us on the radio or on the internet to listen day or night. Go to voanews.com and voaafrica.com and click on your favorite program. Just follow your ears. Music from Africa and the world. We've got it on VOA.
Hello, sports fans. This is the Voice of America, Sonny Young. Please join me Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC for the Sunny Side of Sports. On Fridays, you can also hear my expanded 30-minute show at 17:30 UTC right here on The Voice of America.
Welcome back. You are listening to Reporters Roundtable, which comes to you live from The Voice of America studios here in Washington. Our topic tonight is Kenya's anti-terror efforts. Our panelists are Patrick Deya, Fred Umolo, and Andrews Atas Asamoah, the senior researcher at the Institute for Security Studies. And I'm your host, Douglas Impoga, here in Studio 9. Now, let's go to Andrews in Pretoria. Andrews, what do you make of these increased and brazen attacks by Al-Shabaab in Kenya, and how the government is going about it?
Thank you very much for having me. I think it speaks to about three things. One is the fact that, in 2011, when Kenya deployed into Somalia, Al-Shabaab was very quick to indicate that they were going to take the battle to Kenya. And I think that if you look at the track of the Al-Shabaab incidences and then the perceptions around it, they have virtually been able to increase their hits in Kenya. And that seems to be in line with what they're threatening to do, which is quite worrying to some extent. Secondly, is the extent to which their recent choices seem to be pointing in the direction of trying, to bring the religious dimension much more clearly to what they are doing. We knew that in the past, Al-Shabaab operations in Kenya were more around lone wolves, sporadic attacks through grenades and all of that. But now we are seeing a trend where they ambush and separate people by religion and then shoot non-Muslims. Given the fact that, you know, Kenya has just about 10% Muslim population and the rest being other religions, chances are the other religions may start interpreting the Al-Shabaab threat along religious lines, which also is quite a very dangerous terrain that the group is trying to go. And then also, we also see a bit of inconsistency in terms of communication on the Al-Shabaab's part. If you look at the recent, some of the recent attacks, they link it to happening along the coast in terms of police raids of mosques and all of that. And for a moment, it's not really so much about them wanting to say that Kenya should pull out. That communication seemed to have been secondary to them wanting to be fighting on the side of people they perceive to be their brothers, religious people sharing religious affiliation. So it does seem to mean that the Al-Shabaab now is desperate for to capitalize on any cracks that emerge within the Kenyan society. And if that is the trend they are going to go, then it's going to be a bit more difficult for Kenya to deal with them, because the Kenyan society has a lot of fault lines, which is evidently grappling with to address.
Now, in that situation, what can Kenya do to contain these attacks? Because some security experts have even suggested that Kenya close its borders with Somalia to be able to concentrate on the fight with Al-Shabaab in Somalia. Would that help?
You know, those recommending that Kenya closes the border are really assuming the border is really well protected, and that if the areas that are controlled are closed, it means that there will not be, Al-Shabaab will not be able to come in. But there are two problems with that recommendation. One is the fact that the border is so porous and it's a very long border, so the chances of effective closure of the borders is something that is really almost impossible to achieve. You can only effectively monitor or close approved routes, but the thousands of unapproved routes through which the Al-Shabaab elements will come in are not areas that Kenya can clearly monitor. And secondly, we should not be assuming that many of these Al-Shabaab infiltrations come through approved routes. And so certainly that is the difficulty. The other challenge with that recommendation is that it does not wholly address the question about Al-Shabaab in Kenya. And so first, Kenyan sympathizers of the Al-Shabaab, as well as Al-Shabaab operatives already in Kenya. So that makes a sense to some extent, but in terms of the actual situation we see now, it's going to be very challenging to achieve, but it will not also solve the problem of the first, the homegrown terrorists, as well as Kenyans in Kenya who have affiliation to the Al-Shabaab. I think what Kenya needs beyond, you know, the security operations that we may need to do in a much more cautious way, because we've seen that the few that they've tried in terms of Usalama Watch, as long together with some of the operations at the coast, have ended up being touted as ethnic profiling and have ended up being counterproductive. That being said, I think there's still a role for such kind of operation in Kenya's response, but Kenya then needs to be more proactive with the communication and involve a lot of actors on the ground so that certain communities are not perceived to be targeted. But that is only one strand of the response. I think that going forward, the question that the whole threat of Al-Shabaab raises about Kenya is the fundamental cohesion in the country. And we do know that there are issues of marginalization and exclusion dotted across the country. And I think that that is the primary driving factor in at very many levels for a lot of citizens who are eventually disengaged from the state and are really providing either a cover or providing some support for what is happening with the Al-Shabaab. And I think many of all of these things will need to be resolved. So what Kenya needs is a much more comprehensive response that brings in both non-military options as well as the security options rolled out in a way that will be nationwide, but which will be commensurate with the threat that it has. At the moment, the few options that have been rolled out seem to be quite haphazard, and they do not seem to be as coherent as will be required to deal with the crisis on the ground.
Would pulling out Kenyan forces from Somalia, as Al-Shabaab demands, be part of the solution?
A lot of policymakers have been debating that, but that has a lot of questions, issues. One is that Kenya would have clearly surrendered or accepted defeat to the Al-Shabaab or an Al-Shabaab call. And what we do know, the second thing is that there's no proof that if Kenya pulls out right now, the Al-Shabaab will cease fire on Kenya. And so Kenya is in a catch-22 situation. Kenya went in, obviously, to, for purposes of Kenya's own security, but in the long term also trying to secure Somalia. And I feel that, to some extent, it has to do with the sort of impact that the KDF has succeeded in making, at least in some areas, that the Al-Shabaab is insisting that they withdraw. It's a catch-22 situation. If Kenya withdraws, I do not think the threats will cease because, as I indicated earlier, some of the fundamental causes in this particular case are homegrown. They are around issues of marginalization. They are around issues of exclusion and a lot of issues that have got to be addressed in Kenya. I think that the Al-Shabaab aspect is a symptom, and it's very secondary. It's feeding on a lot of issues that Kenya has. Pulling out will not solve the situation, even though in the short to medium term, one can say the Al-Shabaab may not find a reason to keep hitting Kenya. But the underlying causes will really not be addressed.
Andrews has just been saying, as you may have heard, he was pointing out that the reaction of the Kenyan government to the Al-Shabaab militants may be haphazard. And do you share that view?
It is haphazard. It's very reactionary. We've seen attacks after attacks. And there's no indication that there is a concerted effort from the background in trying to find out who these people are, how do they manage to get to infiltrate the country. I mean, this is something that the security should be at the forefront of security issues, and yet for the longest time, we saw killings after killing, and I think the Kenyan community has actually lost faith because. Mm. The government comes out with certain statements after things have happened. We saw this during the mall attack, after the mall attack, where the government comes and says, oh, we have killed blah, 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 a certain number of people. And yet there's just no evidence that they did that.
Mm-hmm.
Later on, some investigative reporting actually showed that they did not do any of what they said. So the government is playing public relation in where many people, Kenyans, are being attacked and killed.
Mm-hmm.
This is not good for the country.
So, Fred, Asamoah there also mentioned that the government needs to treat carefully and involve the communities because some of the Al-Shabaab elements are lone wolves and some of them live in Kenya and are indeed Kenyans, or they may be of Somali origin. So is the government handling that well?
You need to understand, for example, the last two scenes of the worst attack of the Shabaab are a county that immediately neighbors Somalia is called Mandera. Now, Mandera has a very, very serious clan problem, right? All these people are Somali, but and then there are a few Boranas there. But these clans are ever in conflict ever since before independence, they were ever in conflict. Now, it reached a point where the security apparatus asked for sharing of intelligence. And what happened, since there was an ongoing conflict, certain elements within the clan, within the opposing clan, started sharing intelligence that would set the security apparatus of the country against one clan or the other. So it reached a point where the security apparatus started now ignoring the intelligence. And at this time, then, the Shabab noticed there's a vacuum there, and they started conducting their attacks. So as much as they're involving the security, the community, and involving the different ethnicities that reside within parts of Kenya that suffer great insecurity, there is also that danger of falling into the little wars, the little clan wars that we have amongst ourselves. But that notwithstanding, it only makes sense, it just makes sense to beef up security in terms of increasing the number of policemen where you have the greater security, or increasing the number of soldiers in the poorest border points so as to increase patrols and prevent these kind of cross-border attacks. Right? So as much as you have that problem of not participating or not involving the community in dealing with security, the government in itself has a duty, as expected by those of us who pay our taxes, should be focusing on such areas of weakness and dealing with these problems at the root. The problem is they're not addressing these issues at the root. They're not addressing the root causes.
I see.
That is why we are where we are right now.
Well, we're run out of time, but in a word or two, what needs to happen in about 10 seconds?
I think there needs to be a way that the government can pull back and say, what is the real problem that we need to address and how do we go about it? I think this haphazardness, this reactionary kind of, it's not a long-term solution.
Mm.
And this is a problem that needs a long-term solution because, as we know, the Al-Shababs are not just Somalis. We have the Somali people who are Kenyans.
Yes, that's true.
And just going in and, you know, reactionary really actually antagonizes the community, which makes it different.
Cause, yeah,
exactly. Makes it difficult for the community to collaborate with the government.
Well, that's all the time we have for this edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'd like to thank our panel, my colleague, Patrick Deya, Fred Omolo of the Kenyan newspaper, The Standard. Gentlemen, thanks very much.
Thank you, Douglas.
And many thanks to Andrews at Asamoah, senior researcher at the Institute for Security Studies in Pretoria. Our producer has been Jackson Mvunganyi, and we'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. A reminder that you can listen to this program if you missed any part of it. If you go to our main website at www.voanews.com, click on Programs, scroll down to Reporters Roundtable, and the program will be there. So until next week, thank you very much for tuning in. I'll see you then and have a very good weekend.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bunganyi in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
Can't AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Employment rates are climbing, so definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Session. Remember to connect.